If present world population growth continues, in 900 years there will be 1,000 people per square foot of land surface. I'll be back in a moment with the amazing fact about standing room only. Hello, this is Joe Cruz in the Amazing Facts broadcast, Fact Which Affects You. You know, there are just about 5 billion people in the world, and we're adding 80 million more every year. In all the wars of the United States, that is the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, the Mexican War, the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, World Wars I and II, Korea and Vietnam, we've had roughly 600,000 battle deaths. But do you realize, friends, that the population growth makes up that number every 3 days? If current world population growth figures are projected, preposterous figures are reached almost instantaneously. If we continue growing at the rate we're growing now, there'll be about 7 billion people in the year 2000, and about 900 years from now, there would be 1,000 people per square foot of the Earth's surface. About 1,000 years after that, there'd be a weight of people equivalent to the weight of the Earth. And 2,000 years later, the entire universe would be solid people, and the ball of people would be expanding at the speed of light. But we're already in grave trouble right here and now. The world population is doubling at the rate of once every 35 years. In the so-called underdeveloped countries, which could be more honestly called the never-to-be-developed countries, the population doubling time ranges around 20 to 25 years. Now think for a minute what it means for a nation to double its population in 20 years, as, for instance, Honduras is doing. If those people are going to even maintain their quality of life, everything for the support of people in that country will have to be duplicated in 20 years. That means that where there are 2 dwellings today, there will have to be 4 in 20 years. A road with a certain capacity today will have to have double that capacity in 20 years. It will be necessary to double farm production, double imports, double exports, and so on. Now, the job of doubling everything in 20 years would be a colossal one for a nation like the United States. The very thought of a country like Honduras doubling everything in 20 years is preposterous. As Professor Borgstrom of Michigan State University wrote, "The world is basically a worldwide network of slums with a few islands of affluence. Roughly only 15% of the world's people have anything similar to the quality of life of the average American." End of quotation. Now, these sobering facts bring to light the reality that in the very near future, the world faces a major food crisis. Over 3.5 million of the world's population died in a recent year from starvation, and 66% of the world's population goes hungry every day, and 50% die without ever having known a full stomach. Now, is this condition just? Of course not. Will it worsen? Yes. Jesus, who knew that only His second coming could cure this state of affairs, notified us that a sign of His coming would be famines in divers places. Now think of the terrible starvation and famine that have come to various countries, friends. East Pakistan, for example. Famine that drives 10 million of them over into an already starving India. Senator Kennedy, visiting Pakistani refugee camps, referred to the situation as the greatest human disaster of our time. Now these facts are hard for us to be comfortable about here in North America, friends, and it's hard for us to grasp them as well. There have been some news items indicating that the birth rates in both the United States and Canada are now the lowest in history, and with modern means of farming, there is no end in sight as to the quantity of food surpluses which we seem capable of producing. It's currently estimated that with present farming methods, the world is capable of growing enough food to feed well over 40 billion people. In short, 10 times the population of today's world and with enough to spare. South America's agricultural lands alone could support 9 billion. Yet, the tragic truth is that the world is on the verge of mass starvation. In Cuba, bread is the only food that is not stringently rationed at this present time. In the streets of Calcutta, a mother will chop the limbs off her infant as a means of soliciting sympathy and a few rupees from Westerners. By the year 2000, there will be 7 billion people in our world. A seemingly hopeless problem for political science is how to utilize the world's labor force to produce the needed food to offset famine. One report reveals that 1 out of 4 of the world's workers are usually unemployed, and the situation is getting worse rather than better. The Stanford biologist Paul Ehrlich, in headlining articles quoted throughout the world, reckoned that, quote, there's not the slightest hope of escaping a disastrous time of famine in the near future. It is shockingly apparent that the battle to feed man will end in a rout. End of quotation. You know, a group of 172 eminent people from 19 countries, including 39 Nobel Prize winners, have petitioned the United Nations to halt the population explosion by any and every means. Unless drastic steps are taken, they say, there is in prospect a dark age of human misery, famine, and unrest, which could generate growing panic, exploding into war, fought to appropriate the dwindling means of survival. End of quotation. Well, one expert has written that during the next half dozen years, food production would have to be tripled to meet the nutritional demands of the world. It will be fortunate, friends, if it can be increased by 65%. In fact, there was no increase in the combined output of the world's farms and fisheries, while the population increased 2.7%. Of the additional billion people who are expected in the Earth's population over the next decade, 3/4 of them will be added to the very poor countries. Annual incomes average 1/200th what they are in the United States and Canada. But the United States is by no means exempt from the bleak picture. A government study revealed that we have only a 40-day supply of processed food available in case of famine, 9-day supply on housewives' shelves, 15-day supply with retailers, and 16-day supply with wholesalers and factories. Dr. Ehrlich states bluntly, hundreds of millions of people are going to starve to death. Many will starve to death in of any crash programs we might embark on now. And we in the United States are not embarking on any crash programs. Columnist James Breslin asked, is it right to spend $30 billion to get a man on the moon while children throughout the world have worms coming out of their mouths and while countless others have so little going into those mouths? You know, friends, according to Scripture, it's but another reason why our Lord must come soon. Giving up the space probes won't solve the crisis, but Christ's return will. One food production expert has predicted that 1/2 of all children alive today will starve to death before they reach adulthood. Already, the figures are mushrooming. An estimated 100,000 are dying every day from starvation or malnutrition somewhere in the world. About 1/8 of India's population is reckoned to be in the starving category right now. If the demographers are correct, and the world population continues to double itself every 35 years, then we are in real trouble, friends. From the present almost 5 billion, we would zoom to almost 7 billion by the year 2000, and to 14 billion just 35 years after that. And with an estimated 1/3 of mankind now chronically hungry, what does the future hold? According to many population experts, the mass starvation pattern is irreversibly set already. And within the next decade, millions upon millions will die regardless of what we may try to do to stop it. They contend that we have already waited too long, especially for the underdeveloped countries. All the war casualties of history will not equal the expected global death rate of this impending disaster. Now, friends, with the collapse of physical security, apprehension has grown into paralyzing fear for the great majority of Earth's inhabitants. Jesus described that massive fear long ago in these words, men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth. Luke 21:25-27. Even the leaders of nations, masters of political and social science, are helpless to plot a course that will restore the confidence of their followers. Now let's consider the progress of population. This is a fascinating question if you consider this land of ours from ocean to ocean and border to border. At one time, it supported Indian Indians. Now, the Indians were a very primitive people. They didn't know how to pollute the streams. They were too unskilled to waste the topsoil. They hadn't even yet learned how to burn the forest. So they had unlimited resources. However, they did frequently starve between famines. Now, since we're more civilized, we've washed the topsoil down the drain. We've burned the forest and polluted the streams, but we have 200 billion people living on this same land where Indians starved. Now, in this country, I should say not 200 billion, we actually have about 300 million, I think, now, as far as the population of this country is concerned. All right, in this country, we have almost 10,000 more people for breakfast every morning, or 295,000 new native-born citizens every month. We enjoy the highest standard of living in the world, and we're the only nation on earth that's plagued by surplus. Now, it's a grim fact that two-thirds of the world goes to bed hungry every night. And in America, we beat our kids to make them eat. What is it that we have that these Indians didn't have? Certainly, it isn't resources. It's a complex matter, and yet a simple one also. We have three interrelated factors: democracy, technology, and free enterprise. You can't argue which one is the more important. Let's take a look at what this combination of democracy, technology, and free enterprise does. Automobiles were invented in Europe. They were a much better automobile and further advanced. They had them years before this country did, but there was no democratic climate in Europe that could have produced a Henry Ford with his absurd notion that the working man or the ordinary people should be entitled to automobiles. Neither were there any working men in Europe who thought they had a right to an automobile. Now let's take technology. This is the machine that multiplies a man's strength by a billion times. One anemic citizen pushes a button and does the work of 1,000 coolies. This is technology. It gives us the accuracy to measure things to the thousandth of an inch. The result of democracy, technology, and free enterprise is productivity. We have a fantastic standard of living for the simple reason that up until now, the American working man has outproduced anybody else on earth. We have the highest paid coal miners in the world. Also, we have the man that produces six times as much coal as anybody else. You can take it down the line in all kinds of things, but it's the productivity that created the wealth which gives us our standard of living and which permits us to afford both democracy and culture with inside plumbing. Well, do you know what I believe, friends? I think that no one today can the feeling that this world has almost hit rock bottom and very little time remains. Conditions today are almost what they were during the Roman Empire. Immorality, perversion, drunkenness, gluttony, you name it. It's a soft, materialistic, licentious age when anything goes. And the forces which usually stand unyielding against the inroads of sciences are strangely weak and almost silent. Even the organized kind of religion is turning its head the other way as these evils proliferate. If ever there was a time to seek the Lord and prepare for His coming, that time is now. And ask for folder C. And now, this is Joe Cruz saying goodbye for today.